I am Carrie Ann Walker Mosley. I'm the oldest of the Walker girls here, and I live in North Carolina. I have visited Athens for, I guess, 15 years now, because I am married to Steve and Donna's oldest son, Micah. And we have three children, and we live in North Carolina. I teach aerobics a couple times a week. And I was thinking this morning, this would be so much easier if y'all were all in leggings and workout clothes. It'd be so much easier to do this. It's a little intimidating knowing the wisdom that is in this room. But this morning I'm speaking on something that I have taught on before that is near and dear to my heart. And I hope that it will, that God's word will speak to you today where you are. I want to define patience for you, because that's kind of where my lesson is going to start this morning. Sorry, I'm going to try to stay near the podium because of this thing going on here. The definition of patience is the capacity to accept or tolerate delay, trouble, and suffering without getting upset. And the rest of it, the first part would be totally fine if the last part was not in there, without getting upset. The joke in our family is that in heaven, when God was passing out patience, I was in a different line. I'm sure I was in there for something else. I don't know what it was that I got double, but it was not patience. That's something that has been a hard thing for me, and I think that's true for most people. Unless you cultivate it, patience is not something most of us would say that we are born with, and that it is our gift to be patient. So first, I want to kind of get you thinking, because I don't know if any of you had coffee this morning. I did. So I hope that to wake you up a little bit, I want to get your brain in gear. And I want you to tell me some things that you have had to exercise patience in. Like, what things in your life do you have to think about? We have to be patient in this. Traffic. Very good. What else? With your children, okay? This side of the room, they're 2-0. What you got? Okay, a sick husband. Oh, yes, I know. When a husband gets a cold, the world stops. Unbelievable. Yeah, they are. They are like that. What else? Okay, husbands in general. Okay, so we've got children and husbands in general. Do y'all have any other ones you want to add? Because these were not deep. This is not deep thinking. I'm not trying to get you to dig deep yet. I was just trying to get you to think about how often we have to exercise our patience. I'll tell you the list that I made, which, you know, is probably more shallow than you would like for it to be. Children waiting for Christmas. How many times from June until December do your kids say, "Is it Christmas yet? How many more days till Christmas? How many more days till my birthday?" It's very hard for children to wait for that. Growing up. Most of the time when you're growing up, you're looking for the next phase. I can't wait to be in high school. I can't wait to graduate. I can't wait to go to college. The birth of a child, 10 months is a long time, especially if you're pregnant in the summer. It feels like it's 4 years. I knew that. I think Lane is here this morning waiting for a bad haircut to grow out. Exercises patience and a lot of hair gel and things like that. If you need it fixed, go to Lane, because she's awesome. But I was thinking, oh, how many times have I thought, oh, my word, it's going to be the longest 8 weeks trying to wait for that. Patience in relationships at work. People that you're forced to be with every day, day in and day out, that you normally probably would not have chosen to be with. And waiting for a house to be built. I don't know if any of you have ever renovated or built a house. That's a long process and usually very trying with time frames that are out of your control. So patience is usually associated with waiting. And waiting is really hard when you're thinking about it in a security standpoint, because it's our human nature to want to take care of ourselves. We say, if I can do this, I will. If I can provide this for my family, I'm going to do it. And we want to be workers and doers. Security in our country comes in many forms, and that would be money. And jobs, and a family, having health, making plans for your future, having a house, and relying on your own abilities and talents, which really relates to being in control. Most of us want to be in control of things, and we think, certainly whatever comes my way, I will figure out how to fix, and I will do it ourselves. And when you feel insecure, you feel vulnerable, and I don't think that very many of us are comfortable feeling that way. Especially when our God is not tangible. It's not somebody who can put their wings around you and protect you from things. He's not visible to you, and you're trusting something that you cannot see that is huge and always there. But I think there's a feeling of vulnerability that comes with security. And that relates directly to our story today about Ruth. And because of our time, we're not going to be able to go and read Ruth the text, chapter 1 through 4. So I'm going to give you what I call the skinny version of Ruth. We're going to go through a couple points in her life, and then I'm going to give you three applications. So once we get to those three, you'll know we're almost done. So I'm going to take you through the story that you probably already know. Our text today, of course, is Ruth chapter 1 through 4. So we will be reading some scriptures from there. Janelle is going to read, and Margaret, and then the Hardison sisters. They're three sisters, just like the Walker girls. And they're here, and they're all going to read for us as well this morning, and I appreciate them being willing to do that. So we start this story out with Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons. And they have had to flee from their homeland to go to Moab to escape starvation. So there's a famine. There's no food. There's no work. There's no anything. And they have to get out. So they flee to Moab, which is actually a pagan city. And they stay there and finish raising their children. So our next one is marriage. Naomi's boys grow up, and they marry Orpah and Ruth. So here's your trivia for the day. Did you know that Oprah Winfrey's name was supposed to be Orpah, but her mother misspelled it on the birth certificate? So she should have been that. So if I interchange those, it's because I always look at it and go, actually, Oprah is an easier name, and it's a little bit prettier. So Orpah and Ruth are Moabite women, so they do not worship Jehovah, but they marry these boys. And then, unfortunately, within a 10-year time frame, both Elimelech and his two sons pass away. And it doesn't say why or what happened with that. Elimelech dies first, and then within a 10-year time span, both of his boys have passed away. So this leaves Naomi and two daughters-in-law, with no home and no jobs and not much of a future, because you're all familiar with the way the culture works in the Old Testament, and that is women were completely dependent on men. The society was male-driven. There were not jobs for women. There was not respect for women. They worked for their families and had a very secondary role that would have offered them zero security if they did not have a male and could not return home for their fathers to care for them. Okay, so point number three is Bethlehem. So Naomi decides she's got to go back home. She wants to be with her people and her family, and she's going to go back to Bethlehem. And both of her daughters-in-law know that in the culturals and the customs of that time, they're bound to her. They're part of her family now. They can't go back to their fathers, or they're not supposed to. So they start with her. And these three broken and bitter women are walking. Now it's a women's class. If you don't cry, it's not really a women's class. So I'm sorry. Anyway, so these women are walking towards Bethlehem, and they're all weeping. And Orpah, you know, is like, I'm going with you. And Ruth says, I'm going with you. We're with you. And Naomi says, don't. I am bitter. I am mad. I am broken. And you have a future and a hope here. Stay here. Stay here. And finally, after much pleading, Orpah turns back. And Ruth would not. Oh, so we're coming back to this right here, which is why I'm already keyed up about it. So anyway, obviously, I know most of us have been to a wedding where the words that Ruth speaks to Naomi have been used, because it's a beautiful, poetic way for her to basically say, I'm yours, you're mine, we're family, and I'm not going home. So Naomi finally relents and says, fine, whatever, come with me to Bethlehem, let's go. So they show up in Bethlehem, and all of Naomi's old friends are seeing how broken and sad and whatever she is, and they're thinking, we don't even recognize her. Life has dealt her such a hard deal. We don't even recognize this woman. Is this really her? That's how broken she is at this point. But that just makes it that much prettier at the end. Ruth is young, and she has a strong back, and she has a future ahead of her, and she realizes that Naomi, honestly, is what I picture in this in a modern day time is what we talk about being in a fetal position, somebody who literally cannot get up and do it. And that's where Naomi is. Oh, I'm So sorry. She's lost her people. She's lost her family. She's had to leave where she raised her children. She does not have a husband. She does not see where any good is or where the Lord is for her. She says he has deserted her. So Ruth is like, well, we got to eat. So I'm going to go and glean. And gleaning was a process that was a charitable deed that landowners gave, where the poor in the city could go on the edges of the field and the workers would drop extra grain or leave sheaves on the ground so that those people would have food. And Ruth goes and she finds a field to glean in. And that introduces us to our next part here. Is Boaz. There's this man who rides in. So I want you to picture Prince Charming, okay? Because let's pretend like he has really good teeth and great hair, which you know he didn't because they did not have toothbrushes. But let's pretend like he is, because here's what I love. In the morning, Boaz goes riding in on his horse and he's greeting all of his workers. And he says to them, "The Lord be with you." And they say, "And with you." And Ruth is on the edge of this field, and she's gleaning just at the place that she found, not realizing that God is putting her in the path of more people that love Jehovah and more people who have access to the only true and living God. And Boaz is noble, and he is smart, and he is kind. His people work hard for him, and his people respect him. And then Boaz continues to notice this girl. He says, "Who is she?" I'm assuming she stood out, obviously, because she was from a different country, so I'm sure she looked different than they did. And she's new. And everyone in town has been talking about her. This girl, she left her family, she left everything. She's followed Naomi here, and Naomi's broken and destroyed. And this girl is getting food for them every single day and taking care of her mother-in-law. And so he says, "Share our food, our water, our lunch table with this foreigner." And no one balks at it, because they do respect Boaz, because and they have received his kindness, and he's extending that now to a foreigner. So I think that's the first part of where their love story kicks in, is him seeing her needs and starting to meet them regardless of her backstory. He doesn't care what else is going on. He sees her heart, that it is kind and that it is a servant's heart, and he says, I want to be kind to her as well. All right, so this is one of my favorite parts of the story. This is our redeemer aspect of the story. I'm sorry if y'all can't see that on this side of the thing. It's not really anything special, I promise. But the redeemer part. So I'm not saying anything about most older women, but you know how some older women like to be matchmakers. And so as any good older woman would do, Naomi, I'm going to give you the modern day version of this. Naomi says, "Fix your hair. Get some lipstick, go put on your best dress. You got to go get us a husband." She's thinking, we are not living in this cave and eating this grain forever. You got to get us out of here. And you won't believe this, but this man that has been sharing food and water with you actually can redeem our family and make everything right. And she wasn't aware of the custom that would have been in place at that time for Boaz to have the right to do that and the ability to fix them. So Naomi hatches a plan, and Ruth obeys the plan. And then now we're at the threshing floor. And at the threshing floor, Ruth approaches Boaz, and she asks him to marry her and to redeem Naomi's family and their heritage. And Boaz, again showing his true character and his faith in the Lord, even though he's very flattered, he says, "It's not my right to do this. There is actually another kinsman ahead of me who you would rightfully belong to if he chooses to do that." But he says, "In the morning, I'm going to go to him and ask if he wants this package deal of Elimelech's widow and other widow and land." So the land would have to be pretty tempting for this person to want all of the responsibility that came with that. So, the rite of refusal, Boaz goes to the city the next morning, and in front of witnesses and using a sandal as a contract, he asks the next of kin, "Do you want Elimelech's land? Oh, by the way, it comes with two widows." And the guy's like, "Oh, no. No, I just got married. I've got all these things going on. I absolutely can't take it." And Boaz is like, "Okay, did y'all hear that? He doesn't want it. I'm taking it." And with that, he marries Ruth. So for the wedding, because everything has to be like a Cinderella story, which if y'all have not seen that new movie, go see it. It's beautiful. But it has to end with the prince and the princess on the white horse leaving, and it's even more beautiful than that. Boaz and Ruth marry, and they're blessed with a son named Obed. And Obed not only redeems Elimelech's family and brings joy to Naomi and Ruth, but he secures this family in the lineage of Christ. So we're going to go to three different points. Nancy's going to read for us in Ruth chapter 2, verse 6 and 7. If you could turn to that, please. We're going to go ahead and start our first point, which on the handout, there's room for you to write those if you want to. If you don't want to, just listen. Very good. Okay, so here's what I think, the three points that Ruth teaches us about waiting patiently. Because remember the word that we used at the beginning. This is waiting and being comfortable waiting and finding the good in that. So the first point is to stay busy while you wait. And in that you see that Ruth was busy from morning to night. She was not with Naomi on the floor in a fetal position as well. She was realizing there is work to be done. There are responsibilities that we have. Her life was in shambles as well. She is without her family, without her friends, without a husband. And she is with a woman who at this point can hardly see straight to get either one of them to point B, to make a plan. In that moment, while she's grieving and devastated, she still looks to the responsibilities to her mother-in-law, somebody who was weaker and in need. And she says, I'm going to serve her. I have to serve her or we're going to starve. Her sights were set on another and not herself. And in that time of serving Naomi and working in the fields, God was opening doors and lining up blessings for the girl from Moab. So here's what I want us to think about. What can you do while you're waiting? You can do more than just pray. You can do more than just sit and read scriptures. You can do more than just, there is a time to be still, but there's also a time to do. And most of the time, if you can look outside of yourself and see that there are others around you that are hurting worse than you are or who have an immediate need, then it lessens your pain or makes things seem a little more bearable in the moment. So I want you to think about what you can do while you wait. Are there opportunities for you to serve others who are weak and hurting? Could you teach the lost in this time of waiting that you may not be able to do if you had exactly what you were waiting for already in your hand? You can glorify God even in a period of uncertainty and waiting. And that's what we have to remember. Even in that waiting, God is working behind the scenes, just like he was doing for Ruth. He is lining up blessings every day while she is gathering grain. Every time that she's coming in contact with Boaz, their hearts are becoming more knit together with a love for the Lord that she doesn't even know she has. So God is working behind the scenes, and you have to be willing to look outside of yourself and still work. I'm going to use this as an example, and I know that there's one of my dear friends in the audience has been in this position as well. And so I know that all of you know this. Haven't all of you heard of people who were trying to have children for a long time, and then an adoption shows up? And as soon as they say yes to the adoption, they're pregnant. It's as if God was saying, I want you to have this. I'm going to give this to you, but I want you to do this first. And so they put all of their efforts into, I'm going to have a family. I don't care what it is. It may not look like what I wanted it to look like, but I'm going to trust that God has a plan and do this. And then he opens their womb. And I really feel like that's what it is. I could name six people that has happened to in my life, in my generation. And I know the rest of you have too, because some of those people are in Athens or are from Athens. So anyway, in watching that with one of our dear friends, we realized, man, they did not sit back and just say, well, when the Lord is ready, he will give us children. They said, there are children out there that need a parent. We will take those children. And then God says, and now let me give you this. because you did and you didn't wait. And so in that faith, he blessed them triple. They got three children after that adoption, after saying yes to that. And I know you all know those things. So let that be an example of comfort, of doing and then being blessed outside of that. Our second point is that our circumstances cannot determine our attitudes or our actions. And I think this is the hardest part. And this is kind of what relates back to the patience of saying, how'd that definition go again? That said, without getting upset, because here's what I think that we need to remember, is that the world needs to see us react differently to waiting than they do. They need to see that we have a calmness and assurance and a hope that they can't even pretend to grasp. Ruth is a foreign woman when she enters Bethlehem with Naomi. She has not ever had a relationship with the real, true, and living God on her own. She has only heard of this through the family that she married into. She has only ever known pagan gods and worshipped those. Ruth shows her real beauty in her servant's heart and her attitude. She is submissive to Naomi. She is a hard worker. She's obeying the customs and the laws of the land. When Naomi hatches this plan, instead of saying, I don't really want to marry one of these people, and my customs don't tie me to have to do this, she says, okay, if this is what we need, if this help fixes you and this fixes me, this is what we're going to do. I also love, and we didn't get a chance to really go into this part about Boaz, but one of the things that I love is the way she shows respect to him at the threshing floor. She could have gone to him in front of a bunch of people and embarrassed him and said, you owe us this. This is our right to have you redeem us. This is what you owe us. And instead, she quietly goes to him in the dark and says, will you do this? We need you. I will be submissive and be your wife. Will you do this for us? But if you don't want to, no one will ever know that we had this conversation. And he says, well, of course I will. So she had respect for a noble man who had dignity and honor among the people. She saw that from him from the very beginning. And he was a God-fearing man, and she treated him like he was, even though she did not understand that aspect of it. So she trusted that Boaz would do the right thing. And even when he says, I have to offer it to somebody else, she still goes along with that instead of saying, no, I only want to marry you. I don't want to marry that other dude. But she says, okay, whatever you think, you know God. Naomi's praying about this. Y'all are working together. Whatever is best, I will do. Ruth showed dignity and respect, humility and kindness in very uncertain times when she had no security and zero control over her life. She did not have any control, and she is giving control over to these people that are godly. So I do think that we have the advantage of being able to show the world what it looks like to wait on the Lord, to be patient and wait and serve. And instead of us being so wrapped up and causing drama and stirring up drama and making everything be about ourselves, if we can look to others and meet their needs and see that they have needs as well as we do and say, Lord, while I wait, I will keep my hands busy. I will use my heart and my words and my time to serve your people who are hurting as well. Then we show the world that we live and think differently and that our hope is not here, that we're not waiting for the next thing to be answered here, but that God is, that we are calm and have assurance in him. Our third point is that just like every other story in the Bible, God is the real hero. It looks like Boaz is, and I have painted him like that a little bit today about him being a prince charming, and he rode in on his trusty steed with his beautiful teeth and all those things, and he was a landowner and had all of this going for him. But God is the real hero, just like he is from the beginning of time. Boaz physically protected and redeemed these women, but he did that with the blessings that God had given him. Those were not of his own. God blessed him with the things that he had. He was a man of God, and he allowed himself to be an instrument for the Lord. So now we're going to read Ruth 2, verse 12. Carol's going to read that for us. Okay, so Boaz speaks this to Ruth, and says, "May God bless you for what you have done for Naomi and for how hard you have worked and for who you are." And little did he know, he was the answer to the blessing he is giving her. He had no clue that he was going to be that. But he allowed himself to be the instrument of blessing to Ruth because he was obedient to the Lord. God provided a safe field for her to glean in. In that time, it would have been very common for a woman to be taken advantage of, to be abused. It was a violent time for women, and they were viewed as property and not to be cherished. She just happens upon this field where a man who loves the Lord is in charge and says, "Protect her, give her extra, drop extra, give her food and water, let her sop with us." And they're like, "Huh? Her? She's going to sit with us and we're going to pass her all of our stuff?" And he's like, "Yes, whatever she wants you do, she's a good woman." God made Boaz take note of her. He could have just gone around and counted. "Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, everybody's here today. Let's go." But he's like, "Wait a second. That's a new person. What is her story?" And then once he realizes who she is, he says, "You know, there's something special about her." God made sure that the other kinsmen would refuse. And I think that having two widows with the land made that seem a lot less appealing to someone who did not know Ruth and Naomi already. He was not aware of the blessing that these women would be and how that would counterbalance the fact that they were in need financially and for security with a heritage. God also gave Ruth and Boaz children to carry on their family name. And then God places this woman straight in the line of his own son as a last blessing that she would never know. She didn't even know that's what she would get to call herself, is the great-great-grandmother of the King David. Janelle is going to read for me Matthew chapter 1, verse 5 through 6. Okay, so the security and what I want you to realize in that is that sometimes our timing isn't even in our lifetime. Sometimes the blessing, you know, if you're waiting for someone to obey the Lord, if you're waiting for, you know, you're waiting for things that have eternal value, it may not even come in your lifetime. But if you, one day, when we're all together around the throne and you never know who's there that could be in your family line of an answer that God gave 50 or 100 years after you have passed from this life. And so I love that. Ruth didn't even realize what she was getting. And it's a double blessing. And that's another example of how God goes above and beyond what we even ask for. She asked for a husband. She didn't ask to be linked to Christ. But he says, "You were faithful in a little. I'm going to give you much." And he gave her much. We're going to veer off from our story of Ruth for one second because I want to share with you something. Okay. These words on this chart, I don't know if you can read it in the back, have faith to believe, courage to obey, and patience to wait. Is something that one of our elders' wives in Concord texted me last week because my husband and I were waiting on something that's very, very frivolous. It's a worldly thing. It's not, you know, whatever, but something that has caused disappointment for us. And she sent us these things. And she said, "You have to have faith, girl. You have to have faith in your God, and he will do what you need him to do. And you, this is what she sent me." And almost every day she has sent me some type of a message or hugged me at church or whatever to encourage me that way. And so I want you to realize the power of your words when somebody else is hurting. You can minister to people with your words. If you can't do anything else, if you are a terrible cook and you cannot clean a house and you cannot serve, you cannot go to the hospital, because I do not do the needle thing. So I'm like, "Oh, I will pray for you and make you a casserole. But if you are hooked up to stuff, I cannot come." You have to find the ways that you can serve people, and you have to do that to the best of your ability when you're in that waiting time. And this woman has had many things going on in her life that texted me, including losing her husband last year to cancer, one of our elders. And those words, when she sent me that this week, I thought, how perfect for my lesson, that I am in a waiting period on something, and she is sending me these words of wisdom that all of you have. If you have ever waited, you have wisdom. If you've ever waited for anything, you have wisdom. You can commiserate and be sympathetic to somebody else who is waiting. So you have to reach out. You know, I was thinking, it's the phrase, they've ruined it, the don't ask, don't tell thing, I think is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. You have to ask, and you have to tell people. When somebody says, how are you? You have to say, I am a little bit struggling right now. And then they have to say, I am with you on this. I'm arm in arm with you on this, and I got this with you. Just like Ruth and Naomi were. They were a support to each other while they were waiting for the Lord to answer things. So do not discount even what a text can do for someone, or a little note, or just a squeeze of a hand during a prayer, or whatever that you can do to encourage other people while they're waiting and while you're waiting, that makes everything seem much more bearable. So here's my cheerleader moment for you. You are all women of faith, and I will tell you, I can say this with complete boldness, God will redeem you. And some of you are waiting on such big things. You're waiting on families. You're waiting on people to obey the Lord. You're waiting on husbands. You're waiting on husbands to obey. You're waiting to feel good. You know, you're waiting on big things. God will redeem you. It may not be this week. It may not be this year or this decade. It may not even be in your lifetime. But He sees you waiting. And He sees what you do while you're waiting. And you have an eternal reward that trumps any uncomfort that you feel right now in your waiting. So I'm going to have Margaret read Psalm 37, verse 34 and 39. And then we're almost done. That's right. He is our strength. No matter what you are dealt on this earth, you have an eternal reward, even if you don't feel like your prayers and your wants and desires are being answered by the Lord now. He will redeem you in the end, and it will make it all worth it. Our last scripture is going to be Ruth chapter 1, verse 16 through 18. Janoah is going to read that for us, and then I have one final thought, and we'll be done. Okay, like I said, that's famous in weddings. My parents actually had that in their wedding as well. And so in the thing that we had, our flip chart, I put a cross here. Because when you just have read this story as a child, the story of Ruth and Naomi, and even when you just on the surface study it, because most of us don't look at this very often, this story, it looks like Ruth is obeying out of duty, that she says, I'm going to go with you because you don't have anything else. It's like out of compassion and duty that she says, I'm going to go. Orpah already left you. Who's going to take care of you? Who's going to do these things for you? It looks like it's a cultural norm and out of desperation that she's trying to fulfill her duty to her mother-in-law. But remember that Ruth came from a pagan nation. And the only family that she has ever come in contact with who knows Jehovah is this family. So the thought that I like to think about this, the way I like to look at this crossroads, literally a crossroads on the way to Bethlehem, is, what if Ruth was chasing God? And this wasn't so much about Naomi, But her saying, if that woman goes to Bethlehem without me, I will never see that God again. She had no access to him on her own. That was not what her people worshipped. Her heart craved what he had to offer that she had seen in this family, even in their brokenness, even though they have experienced famine, they've had to leave their homeland, and all the men are dead, she still sees a value in these people and something that they're living for that is so much better than what's in the temples in her homeland. So I want you to always think about that differently, that this was not a thing of her just saying, I'm going to do this because I'm supposed to do this. She was attracted to the Lord that she saw in Naomi, and other people can be attracted to us that way. And so in that, we have to pursue him and chase him in our waiting. No matter how bad it gets, no matter how long the waiting is, or how afraid or uncertain or confused we are, if we follow him and keep our eyes on that, we'll get through it. And we'll probably bring others with us like Naomi did. You'll encourage others. You might build their faith or bring them to a faith that they didn't even have. So I want you to make him your whole pursuit, because he will redeem you. And just like Ruth, he will give you more than you even imagined. And that's the lessons that I think that we can learn from this. In a second, Brooke Harrington is going to come and share for just a minute some thoughts that she has had in a waiting time. But I wanted to close us out with a prayer really quickly about Ruth and about us waiting. God, thank you for today. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and to learn more with these women of faith. Thank you for the time and the effort that each person has put aside to take out of the time away from their families and from the busyness of life to come and pour into your word. And Lord, thank you for Ruth. Thank you for the story that you have given us in her and the hope that she gives us for even better things than we could even imagine and pray for. And Lord, please let others see that in our waiting that we still have hope and that we can be still and wait for your perfect timing in all of the aspects of our life. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the comfort that you give us. Thank you for the promises that are everlasting. And thank you most of all for your son who makes it possible for us to achieve our eternal reward with you one day, no matter how long we wait here. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
When asked to give this talk, I said yes, but on the inside I was thinking no. I often don't think I'm wise or adequate enough to talk about this, but I know at the end of the day it's going to make me stronger. When I think of waiting on the Lord in my own life, I think about losing my mom to cancer. I look back on those 6 years of my mom battling cancer, and I have realized that there was a lot I didn't understand. There still is a lot I don't understand. I've heard many people talk about the wonderful woman that my mom was and the amazing talents that she had and the good things that she did for God's people. If my mom heard about the way people talk about her, I know she would deflect the praise and give it to someone else. But my mom would also be the first to admit that she was a sinner just like you and I. Today I look to my mom and everything I do, and she's become my hero. She's my hero because all throughout her sickness, she never lost sight that she wanted heaven to be her goal. I watched for 6 years as she battled through chemo, radiation, diets, medication, and pain, and I believe she gracefully took whatever God handed her and in turn taught me the importance of trusting God and his timing. When she was at her worst, she would often hide in her closet, take her Bible and shut the door, and she would read and she would pray. It was always humbling. About an hour or so later, my dad and I would find her asleep on the floor with her Bible next to her. My mother was the most godly person I've ever met. She took her faith seriously because she genuinely wanted to be in heaven, and she wanted everybody that she loved to be there as well. I would often ask why such a godly woman had to suffer, and why someone so genuine in her faith had to hurt the way that she did. As her time was drawing to an end, I didn't understand how someone so godly could be taken away. Watching her go throughout her sickness was one of the hardest things I have ever had to do. We prayed for her health, her doctors, and her strength. We prayed that God would heal her of this horrible disease. And after a year of fighting, God answered our prayers, and it was exactly what we had wanted. She had beat cancer. But about 4 years later, the cancer came back. We prayed. She fought. We waited. And after several months of her battling cancer, God answered our prayers again. But it wasn't the answer we were wanting from God. This time, she was taken to heaven, which is the ultimate cure. I have learned that God always, always, always answers our prayers. But it may not be the answer that we want or expect from God. When I think of waiting on the Lord, I think about His timing versus our expectations of Him and what we want Him to do. I wanted my mom to see me walk down the aisle. I wanted my mom to meet my children. And there are times now I wish I could pick up the phone and ask her advice. And as sad as it makes me that my mom isn't here with me, God is telling me now that I need to wait. The beautiful thing about all this is that I know I will see my mom again, and that's something I'm willing to work and wait for. I want to close by reading Revelation 21. When my mom was at her sickest, this always encouraged me. I'm going to read Revelation 21, verses 1 through 5. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, Behold, I am making all things new. Also he said, Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And in Revelation 22, Jesus says three times, Behold, I am coming quickly. Behold, I am coming quickly. Behold, I am coming quickly. And although I have to wait, I know Jesus is coming quickly, and I will get to be with her one day. Thank you.